Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:06 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is June 27th. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with Bitcoin because it was a broadly risk-on day. So we saw that the majority of stock markets were in positive territory, bond yields went up a bit, but oil prices were lower, and I think that was primarily because of what we're seeing out of China. And there was a mild appreciation of the yuan in early trading because they fixed it higher, but this was nothing that would could be described as a dynamic move. And there's still, I think, a broad swathe of the investment population around the world are waiting for some form of evidence to support the view that they're going to engage in greater stimulus. The yen was also a bit weaker in here today. Gold was a small bit weaker. Copper was down a tad, but not in a dynamic manner. We did have some greater volatility in the grains and beans, and also in sugar. Then we continue to see a lot of variability in the natural gas price, where it was basically unchanged in the USA, but then moving around quite a lot in both the UK and in Europe. So certainly, there's a lot going on here, but I thought that the fact that Bitcoin is continuing to hold the 30,000 level, it suggests that investors are definitely willing to take positions here ahead of the decision on whether an ETF will be permissioned. The supply of Bitcoin in particular can't easily be increased. So there's a broad swathe of big investors that aren't going to sell. Then you have what's basically the free float, and if there is an ETF, much less if there are several ETFs, it's going to soak up whatever the available free float is. Then we also know that we're less than a year away from the halving of the reward for creating new Bitcoin. So we're right in the cyclical period where we should begin to anticipate that there will be a further concentration of interest in the limited supply argument. And any kind of significant move in Bitcoin is likely to be mirrored in Ethereum, and the price is also beginning to steady again in here. It was up $43 in here today, but it's been ranging below the 2000 level now for a year. And this looks like a base formation with a sequence of higher reaction lows within it. Then you have Banco Santander is really one of the champions of the Ripple network, and there's also a sequence of higher reaction lows. It was in very mild positive territory in here today, but again, this is a base formation. It's going to have to at least sustain a move up through the 60-cent level in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. So anytime Bitcoin goes up, it's generally in response to a more of a risk-on day. And the Nasdaq was in positive territory in here today. So basically countermanding the decline that we had yesterday. And it was being led higher by some of the bigger technology companies. The mania evolving around the artificial intelligence remains very much in play. But it was Lucid Group was the main decline, or excuse me, advancer. But what really caught my attention was that it was Old Dominion Freight Line was the second largest advancer, and the transportation index has popped on the upside. So that's rather interesting. It suggests that there will be some additional interest in global trade. And then let's also just in thinking about the Dow theory, if the industrials and the transportation index are capable of pushing on to new highs, then that would be confirmation of a bullish environment overall. Now we're not quite there yet, and there would certainly have to be more substantive action in order to push both of these indices up to new highs, much less new all-time highs, but at least today was a more positive day overall. And it does, of course, beg the question whether all of this talk about recessions is just talk, and is it really worth the time to avoid being in the market? Well, considering the momentum moves that are underway, it's very easy to look like a Cassandra. And I think this is also, unfortunately, a part of the rationale behind the signal that comes from the inverted yield curve. So the 10-year minus the 2-year is down to nearly 100 basis points of an inversion, and the only time we've seen anything like that was in the early 1980s. So the pace of liquidity contraction and or I guess the pace with which interest rates have gone up is something that will have a knock-on effect eventually. But there are a number of mitigating factors. I think one is that there was a massive volume of cash printed, and just beginning to withdraw it, it's going to take time for it to have a knock-on effect. On top of that, you have that, it, particularly in the USA, you have a lot of homeowners that were able to lock in very low mortgage rates. So they're not really under interest rate pressure as a result of that. But of course, what also means is that they're not going to move house either. So if you had to move house, you would have to then give up your 3% mortgage, and then the mortgage payment would be so much higher. So home builders are really starting to pull away here, and this is clearly starting to accelerate. And then I think it's also worth highlighting that there are plenty of accelerating trends here. And it's not just in the AI sector. So Eli Lilly is very clearly accelerating. Now, they have a breakthrough new drug, and that is being priced in. And a pill that one can take for diabetes, where the potential is that one could lose 25% of body weight within 12 months of taking the pill. And then there would be the constant need to continue taking the pill, because what it does is it masks the signals being sent to the brain rather than permanently altering the appetite signals that the brain has. So then that is the very essence of a chronic solution type drug, which is a wonderful cash flow generator. So then it's worth thinking as well about Novo Nordisk, because they really have had it all their own way for the diabetes sector. So this share is now beginning to pull back towards the trend mean, and some of the reason for that is because Eli Lilly is taking some of the market away from them, and Eli Lilly's drug is perhaps a little bit more attractive than Novo Nordisk's. So the 1,000 crown level is going to be a very significant level that needs to hold if this trend is going to remain consistent. But then it's also going to raise some important questions for other types of companies within the sector. So a lot of the companies that are producing glucose monitors, they haven't been hitting new highs. And in fact, they are well below the peaks that were put in 2021. If there are new oral drugs that can be taken, then there won't be quite the same need to monitor glucose. So then that's going to impede their growth trajectory. And of course, obesity and diabetes are a global phenomenon, and any kinds of drugs that can be made available to people will be best sellers. There's practically no question of that. Then, of course, we have the AI companies that have been accelerating higher, and Nvidia is still in positive territory here, holding the $400 level. Now, it's extraordinarily overextended, and there's a huge bet underway that people are going to be buying these hand over fist, that their A100 chip, which goes into the data centers, is something that will have to be bought in huge volume. to create the large language models, the AI databases, and then to also further the ambitions of the sector. So much most particularly to create autonomous cars and potentially also autonomous robots. So that's what's being priced into the share. Now, let's just put that into perspective. The number of companies that are actually trading above their 200-day moving averages is now less than half. So we've had a fairly significant contraction over the course of the last few weeks. So not only does do we have concentration of returns in the seven large companies, well, it used to be eight large companies, but Netflix, having had a steep decline and now a really quite impressive rebound, is not quite as large as some of the other seven. And even then, it's a market cap of 185 billion. But and this trend is still consistent on the upside, even if we are looking at a process of consolidation underway right now. I think the important point here is that these trends are likely to persist, and the narrowing of breadth, where we have eight companies represent 24% of the entire market cap of the whole market in the USA, and that seven represent 50% of the NASDAQ 100's total market cap. So that's a very significant contraction, or I guess a narrowing of breadth overall into an environment where less than half of companies are trading above their 200-day moving averages. So there's clearly evidence of a mania, but the time to be most alert to the risk of a significant contraction will be when the Federal Reserve eventually turns around and stops raising interest rates and begins cutting. And we're just not there yet. So the 10-year yield was in positive territory in here today, and still holding the region of the 200-day moving average and the 3.5% level. So the sequence of lower rally highs is still intact, but we will need to see it sustain and move down through the 3.5% level to signal that investors are taking a deflationary risk more into account. Now, oil prices today were negative, and I think that is certainly to do with the reticence that the Chinese administration have to introducing additional new stimulus. So Brent crude down about $1.79, coming back down to the lower side of the range. The medium-term sequence of lower rally highs is still intact, and my gut feeling has been that the break, when it comes, will be on the downside. Now, when we look at this on the weekly chart, we can also see that it is closing on the lower side of the range. And on each of the weekly candles that it has come down like this, it has rebounded by the end of the week. Now, of course, we're only on in Tuesday, so it has plenty of time in which to bounce through the balance of this week, but it really will need to be getting about it. And I think it is also quite obvious here that over the last 10 weeks, resistance has been found in or encountered in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And this is still a downtrend overall. So then let's take a look at China. So the CSI 300 was in mildly positive territory in here today, but it really has quite some work to do in order to break the sequence of lower rally highs and begin to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And the banking sector has been under pressure. There was initial enthusiasm back at the beginning of May because there was speculation that when stimulus comes, it will be focused within the state-owned sector and that they will be the primary conduit for stimulus. But so far, there hasn't been anything to really support that view. And amid continued talk about providing stimulus, we haven't really seen any evidence that it's about to actually take place. And then, Even though the rest of the world is worried about inflation, Japan continues to devalue the yen, and it was up, or the dollar was up 55 ticks against it in here today. It's coming up to test the 145 yen level. And I think this is a persistent process now of devaluation. So Japan is certainly going to be achieving productivity gains relative to much of the rest of the world with this devaluation, where now the yen is accelerating lower relative to the euro, and that's a really substantial breakout by the euro as it just cruises up through the 150 level. And it's now coming back up into the peaks that were posted back in 2007 and 8. Now the Nikkei has pulled back over the last couple of weeks. I got stopped out on Friday. I basically forgot to write it up on Friday evening, so I included it in comment of the day yesterday. But the index was off its lows in here today, and the trend is not quite as consistent, but at least it is holding here in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. So, with a more positive outlook on Wall Street today, then there's the possibility at least that the Nikkei will be in positive territory in here tomorrow. Then what happens in China is obviously going to have a knock-on effect for any country that exports into into them. And the Australian market was up about 0.5% in here today and still holding the 7,000 level. Now that was a big downward dynamic that we saw last week. So Australia does have some work to do in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And New Zealand also, they may be approaching the end of the interest rate hiking cycle. But the New Zealand fully gross 50 is looks a bit like it's rolling over. And we're still quite a bit below the peak put in 2021. So it definitely needs to hold the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It hasn't quite spent as much time in the region of that MA over the last decade. In fact, the last time it spent this much time around it was back in 2011 and 12, and prices have gone up a lot since then. And of course, what happens in China will also have a rather large knock-on effect for New Zealand. Now, if we look at the respective currencies, the Australian dollar has tried to push up through the 200-day moving average, didn't quite make it last week, is a little steadier in here today. That's quite a bit of volatility, but it's going to have to at least sustain a move up through the 1,000-day moving average to break the 2.5-year downtrend. So as we look at more of these currencies, we can see that there's quite a bit of variability, and certainly the yen is among the weakest currencies in the world. And the dollar, when we compare it on to the euro, hasn't really rallied much, but it is steady, at least steady, in the region of the 200-day moving average. When we think about what are the potential obstacles, well, we do know, for example, in the USA that all those people that had payment holidays on their student loans are going to have to start paying them again in August. So that's going to pull back some of the spending power of a fairly significant swathe of the population. Now, gold today was in negative territory, and that is, I think, very much reflecting the outlook that interest rates could go higher from here. I do think that we are at the point where central banks are on the cusp of making a mistake. They had to raise interest rates to try and get inflation under control. Now it seems to be that they're single-mindedly focused on inflation and not really willing to consider that they really should be pausing and waiting to see how some of the factors that are already unfolding actually affect inflation. So I think that's most particularly true in the USA when so many student loan borrowers are going to have to start making repayments next month. But This, I think, is where they're going to make a mistake. They're going to over-tighten, and that's going to have a negative knock-on effect, and particularly then for company earnings. And that will be the causal factor for a future recession. But of course, we're not quite there yet. And the time to be particularly vigilant is when they start cutting rates, and we're not there yet either. So, in that environment, it's perhaps wise to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, to be particularly vigilant about the consistency of trends, and to just wait and see what happens next. So then let's think about what's happening in the UK. The FTSE 250 was a little steadier in here today, and it's oversold in the short term. And it looks like the senior doctors are now going to go on strike, having or I guess the nurses avoided going on strike yesterday, so the senior doctors voted in favor of going on strike today. And the pressure that's going to come to bear on the government to continue raising wages is something that is going to continue to be a factor in the UK economy. They need to get inflation under control, and in order to do that, it's probably going to require a rather significant recession to kill off demand. And that is part of the reason why they don't want to continue raising wages. And they also don't want to cut taxes either. They're trying to siphon money out of the system rather than put more money in. And since the FTSE 250 is a domestic index, then it's likely to reflect the outlook or the perception of what demand is going to be like in the economy. And the valuation suggests that earnings are going to come under pressure. But because the Bank of England looks likely to make a mistake and over-tighten, well, then that is helping to support the pound, and it was in mildly positive territory today, and so far holding the breakout to new recovery highs. So we're still in a rather interesting environment where we're starting to see that there's more volatility coming through in the commodity sector, that some of the emerging markets are performing better, that there is a mania evolving in the artificial intelligence sector, and it does not yet look like it is over, but that monetary conditions continue to tighten. And monetary factors beat most other factors most of the time. And particularly so when we have inverted yield curves that have been in place for a year already. I think we're certainly in a very interesting environment. And I would just hasten to add that it did look like a recession was likely in 2020. And there were big surprises arrived that contributed to the evolution of that recession. Nobody was predicting the pandemic, but it certainly ticked all the boxes to create the recession. But because it was likely that a recession was on the way, then central banks moved with alacrity. And it's potentially also likely that central banks will move quite quickly in the event that growth starts to roll over. But now, having been through the visceral experience of inflation, they're probably not going to be as generous. And that's one of the things that I think has not been priced into the technology sector. But and perhaps it's also something that could affect the potential for asset price appreciation in just about every asset class. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.